From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Elsa Chang.
And I'm Audie Cornish.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning.
That song, and so many other American folk classics, was written by Pete Seeger. The musician, who died in 2014, traveled the world as an ambassador of folk music through much of the 20th century and some of the 21st. Along with Woody Guthrie and others, Seeger was one of the founding members of the New York City-based Almanac Singers. The group borrowed old folk melodies to sing about contemporary issues. This week marks the 100th anniversary of Seeger's birth, and to commemorate his centennial, Pete Seeger, the Smithsonian Folkways Collection, is being issued. The book that comes with it was written by curator and archivist at Smithsonian Folkways, Jeff Place. Welcome to the studio.
Well, thanks for having me.
We know him as someone who borrows and brings to the mainstream certain things he finds in other cultures. What did you learn about Pete Seeger as a writer looking through his papers?
You know, he was a great writer. He had, like, you know, like I say, he had a column called Apple Seeds in a magazine called Sing Out for many, many, many decades, and a number of different books where he sort of wrote about the songs he was doing.
And in a way thought of his work as journalism.
Yeah. And he was great on going and finding these little, like, quotes in political history books and other books, you know, in literature, and then kind of taking them out and using them in his columns. Like the song Where Have All the Flowers Gone came out of a Russian novel. He found a line in there which inspired him to do Where Have All the Flowers Gone.
Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? The girls have picked them, everyone. Oh, when will you ever learn? Oh, when will you ever learn?
I want to talk about some of the songs that were never released. One of them that's featured here was recorded in the 1940s. Pete Seeger was sent to war, right? He was stationed in the Pacific. And in the collection, you have a series of his letters. What was he writing about, and what do we come to understand about this period?
Well, you know, Pete Seeger was in the service in the Pacific and hanging out with folklorists a lot, you know, so he kind of went over there and he used the opportunity to record, like, you know, indigenous people from that part of the world, and he recorded a lot of other soldier songs. He had this sort of looked like a mimeograph letter or something he'd send home to all his friends reporting on his findings, called Reports from the Marianas.
This next song is one I learned from some soldiers who were stationed down in New Caledonia. And there'd been some Australians down there, and the Australians taught him this song. It's called Dinky Die. He went up to London and straightaway strode to Army headquarters on Hosbury Road to see all the blodgers and dodge all the straff by getting soft jobs on the headquarters staff. Dinky Die, Dinky Dinky Die, Dinky Die, Dinky Dinky Die, by getting soft jobs on the headquarters staff. Now that's all there is to it.
We think of Seeger as a pacifist. What do you learn from that period about how he came to that position, or sort of his thoughts on that experience?
Well, you know, I once heard an interview with Pete being asked by a member of the audience, and he was saying, well, Mr. Seeger, you know, you don't believe in war or fighting for any cause. And he said, no, that's not true. There was a time period in the 1940s when there was a reason to fight for the cause, and I was there, and I would do it again if it happened again.
I want to talk about another song. This one is called The Ballad of Dr. Dearjohn. It was recorded in 1963. And how did you find it in the collection? What's the history of it?
Well, you know, the thing about the Folkways collection and Pete Seeger, he put out 70 albums for Folkways, and he also put out 300 or 400 extra tapes of additional material that was never used. So I started going through all those tapes, and I found this song that had been written and published in a magazine called Broadside. And what was interesting about it, it was contemporaneous to 1962 and the Canadian healthcare law, the Saskatchewan law, and the debates in the song were identical to the whole thing we've been hearing about Obamacare in the last few years.
I'm a rather poor man with a worrisome life. 10 years I've been wed to a sickly wife. She does nothing all day but sit down and cry and wishing to God that she would die. I'd take her each week to see Dr. Dijon. She likes him all right, but his fees are so strong. It's hospital therapy, medicine too. The bills are gigantic, and what can I do?
Listening to a song like this really reinforces how he was carrying on this tradition of broadsides. Can you talk about this idea and how committed he was to it?
Yeah, well, the thing was, if you have to go back many, you know, hundreds of years, and before there was, you know, all this media and you know, radio, television, and all this, and what would happen is political events or satires or things would happen, and someone would write a satirical song or a topical song about it, and they publish it on pieces of paper for like selling for like a nickel. They were called broadside ballads. So this is sort of out of that tradition of people who were trying to write broadside ballads in the 1960s.
Now, Pete Seeger was born in New York City, and the Hudson River was important to him, especially as he lived further up the river in later years. Can you tell us the story behind the song of Time and Rivers Flowing?
Yeah, Pete was he spent years and years traveling the country and all over the world, actually, in the 60s, like, you know, singing. He was one of the first guys to sing multicultural, you know, songs and things like that. And somewhere along the line, apparently it dawned on him that he actually never paid any attention to where he actually lived, what was going on there. He says, I'm a total stranger in my own hometown when I go home. He noticed the river was like the sewage floating in the river. But he got to know the shad fishermen. The shad fishermen would take him out and show him all this, like, you know, environmental damage. And so he wrote the song for the shad fishermen.
Of time and rivers flowing, the seasons make a song.
He really tried to build movements through his music, or at least connect to movements through his music. How does that connect to what you see going on the landscape today?
He has, like, they talk about Pete's children. There's a lot of movements he was part of that he didn't really start or, you know, he lent his hand to, like civil rights movement and things like that. But I think that the environmental thing on the river was really kind of Pete. Everybody thought of this head. He thought it was this, like, completely insane thought that he was going to build this boat, a sloop, and sail up and down the bay and, you know, telling people the river was been playing music and all this stuff. But he did it. And there's still a festival up there every year, and all these people who come, and there's still people who are going up and down the river on that boat, even after Pete's gone.
That's Jeff Place. He's curator and archivist at Smithsonian Folkways. The collection we've been talking about is Pete Seeger, the Smithsonian Folkways Collection. Thank you for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And the gods of moving waters will tell us all they know. The circles of the planets, the circles of the moon.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Atlassian, a collaboration software company powering teams around the world, committed to providing the tools and practices to help teams plan, track, build, and work better together. More at Atlassian.com. From Jones Day, an integrated partnership collaboratively providing legal services for more than a century. 43 offices, 5 continents, serving clients as one firm worldwide. Learn more at JonesDay.com. And from Hiscox. Hiscox tailors its policies to fit the unique needs of each small business. Quotes and information on insurance policies are available at Hiscox.com. Hiscox, business insurance experts.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Allentown Art Museum, presenting exhibitions from world-class artists and a collection of more than 19,000 works of art, offering activities for the whole family, from yoga in the galleries to discussions with artists and national opinion leaders, third Thursday events, and family activities every Sunday. The Allentown Art Museum is the Lehigh Valley's center for creativity and meaningful conversation. For more information, allentownartmuseum.org.
WDIY Allentown, the Lehigh Valley's trusted source for NPR News for more than 20 years.
WDIY 88.1 Allentown at 6 o'clock. Coming up next, your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and access podcasts of prior broadcasts as well for any of the shows here on WDIY that we keep. You just go to local programming, scroll down to Your Financial Choices, and peruse what is available. Today is May 1st, 2019. The markets were down today, the Dow closing at 26,430, the NASDAQ at 8,049, and the S&P at 2,923. Our topic tonight is accessing retirement accounts. When and how? We are live. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. You can talk live on air by calling 610-758-8810. And Lori will put you through and we can answer your questions. If you're not comfortable talking live on air but still have a question, you're still welcome to call that same number, 610-758-8810. Lori will write it down and bring it into the studio and I'll do my best to answer. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So I have been away for a couple weeks, happy to be back and excited about this topic. I think it's an important topic and it impacts almost all of us. And it's about accessing retirement accounts, when and how. And that is the important part of the conversation. Many of us realize that we will access our retirement accounts when we reach our normal retirement age, but even that can mean different ages, and it can mean different things to different people. Many of us have different types of retirement accounts. Many of us have most of our savings in our retirement accounts, and we may need to tap them prior to retirement age. And again, back to what is retirement age, what age does that mean? And it can have very different meanings. What we don't all realize is that there are rules around when we can tap it, how we can tap it, and what it will mean to us, and it depends on what kind of accounts they are. So we need to understand what type of retirement accounts we have, if, and especially if, we need to tap our retirement accounts sooner than what we might expect. Why should we care? Because having the proper information can make the difference in taxes and penalties that may apply. And ultimately, if it can make a difference in the taxes and or penalties that you have, it will also make a difference in your cash flow. And if you're having to tap retirement accounts early, well, that means you don't have good cash flow possibly. And we want to try to preserve that and take care of that as much as we can. So with information ahead of time, again, always about being proactive and not reactive, it can make a difference. Generally, I don't like to encourage people to take money out of retirement accounts, but what I do want to encourage is educating yourself on if you have to do something like that, having the best information available. And there could also be cash flow, taxes, and penalty problems if you don't take money out of your retirement accounts. So for the most part, I'm going to focus on when we're taking money out of retirement accounts. But if I have time at the end, I can also talk about what happens if you don't take it out. If you have something called excess contributions, that can be a problem, or excess accumulation. So it can all mean something. Again, so if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. As regular listeners know, I love questions. It's my favorite part of the show. So let me try to break this down. What I want to try to do is try to give a framework for this. So, and then build up through the hour, because it can get a little complicated and I tend to jump into details. I like details, but I don't want to lose you in the details. So let's start with kind of the basics of what I mentioned at the top on the topic. Retirement ages. That was a key element of this. So retirement ages, and that can mean different things. So we're going to talk about retirement ages. Retirement account types. So what kind of a retirement account do you have, or you might have more than one type. So we're going to talk about retirement account types, and then tapping our retirement accounts when and how. So first, let's kind of blow through some of these ages, the retirement ages, and then I'll tell you and talk to you about the importance of them. So retirement age can mean different things to different people. Quite often I'll hear people say, well, I'm going to retire at 62 because that's my retirement age, because they think in their mind that's the earliest you can take Social Security. Other people will say, I'm going to retire at 65 because it's been ingrained in them that perhaps work tells them the normal retirement age is 65, so they think that's the retirement age. My father-in-law just retired, and he's 91. So a retirement age can mean very different things to different people, and the consequences of, you know, tapping retirement accounts could mean very various things depending on those ages and what kind of accounts you have. So quite often when I am talking about retirement ages with people, there are several that stand out. 55 is one. It could be even as early as 50, but for most of us, it's going to be 55. For those public safety workers, age 50 might be an important age for you. If I have public safety workers listening, that might be an important age to know about. Age 55, age 59 and a half. Now, that is the retirement age that most of us should probably be focused on. Not that we have to retire, but that is the normal age that we can take money out of our retirement accounts without a 10% penalty. The focus of the show tonight is talking about avoiding that 10% penalty and some other types of penalties that may be assessed on some of your retirement plan decisions. So age 59 and a half is one where we can feel pretty good that if we have to tap our money, we at least won't have a 10% penalty. Still income tax on a regular retirement account, but no 10% penalty after age 59 and a half. Literally after age 59 and a half, by the way. Not in the year you turn age 59 and a half. Very important. 62, I mentioned, because Social Security, a lot of people think that's a retirement age. 65, I mentioned. Full retirement age, a lot of people are plugged into their full retirement age and will say, well, my retirement age is Social Security's full retirement age, which could be anywhere from age 66 to 67, depending on when you were born. Age 70 is an important age, again, for Social Security. Age 70 is an important age. And age 70 and a half. And age 70 and a half is that age where if we have retirement accounts, the IRS basically says you need to start taking required minimum distributions. So age 70 and a half is important. But remember, I said it could be different and there's different rules, because guess what? My father-in-law, who is 91 and still working, he might not have had to take his required minimum distribution. So we're going to talk about that as we go through the hour. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And when we come back, we're going to talk about retirement account types, and then we're going to try to pull this all together and talk about what it might mean to you if you have to tap retirement accounts before regular retirement age. So again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can call in, give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. We'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Tom Druckenmiller. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 and Sunday from 11 to 1 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters, plus interviews, concert information, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also streaming live at wdiy.org. We are talking about accessing retirement accounts, when and how, with a particular emphasis on avoiding a 10% penalty if you have to tap your retirement accounts early. So we're laying this out kind of in a format of, first, let's talk about retirement age means, and those ages will come into play as we move through the show that I mentioned before our last break, age 50, 59 and a half, 62, 65, not really. I just kind of threw that in, that a retirement age can mean different ages to different people. Some people think Social Security full retirement age is their age of retirement, age 70 and 70 and a half. They all have some meaning. Retirement account types. Retirement account types, you could have an IRA, which is an individual retirement account, a Roth IRA, which is an individual retirement account funded with after-tax dollars, such that when you take the money out of the Roth, the goal is to take out distributions income tax-free. For the most part, that could work, but if you're having to tap it early, it may not work that way, so we need to talk about that. So Roth IRAs, simple IRAs, that's an could be a plan that an employer provides for a smaller employer. It's a little bit cheaper administratively for a small employer to implement a simple IRA. Different rules apply to that. A SEP IRA, typically, quite often, that is used for self-employed people. A 401k. Now, let me differentiate for a moment. Those other accounts I just mentioned, individual retirement accounts, they're kind of governed under different rules under the IRS than a 401k or a 403b plan. Those are considered qualified plans under ERISA. I can't even remember what ERISA stands for, but under ERISA, and there's other rules that apply to them. And this is what sometimes confuses people when they are talking about maybe tapping money from their accounts. They mix up the rules and they don't understand that rules or exceptions to 10% penalty or even rules on distributions of these various retirement accounts, they don't, it's not the same across the board. That's why you have to understand that there's different types. So the IRA batch that I mentioned, and not all the rules are the same for even those, but for the most part they are, but not all the same. And then the qualified plans like 401ks and 403bs. We also have designated Roth accounts in 401ks. So your employer may provide a Roth feature to a 401k plan. That's still under ERISA while it's with your employer. And then if I have time, I also want to touch on Social Security and pensions and how tapping those early may have an impact as well. So we've talked about ages. We've talked about retirement account types. Now, tapping retirement accounts. Again, we're just kind of setting the groundwork for the discussion tonight. Tapping retirement accounts. When would we tap our retirement accounts? Well, we could tap it at normal retirement age, which I mentioned, age 59 and a half. It's not really necessarily the normal retirement age across the board at different employers. You might have an employer who says you have to retire at 65 or normal retirement age is 65. Some employers will say normal retirement age is, you know, a combination of your years of service plus your age. So normal retirement age can have different meanings. But under the IRA rules, age 15, or the IRS rules, age 59 and a half is when you can tap a retirement account if eligible to, because certain employer plans, they're not going to let you take a distribution out at age 59 and a half, but there is not a 10% penalty at age 59 and a half. So 59 and a half could be an age where you might tap your retirement account. The required minimum distribution age would be a time where you would have to tap your retirement account if you're, you know, retired. And the required minimum distribution age is age 70 and a half. You must start taking minimum required distributions or required minimum distributions. Some people call them RMD, some people call them MRD, whatever you call it. At age 70 and a half, you have a required minimum distribution. You must take it in the year you turn age 70 and a half, no later than April 1st of the year following the year you turn age 70 and a half. The reason I differentiate between those two is because if you wait until April 1st of the year after you turn age 70 and a half, then you're going to have two distributions you're going to have to take. So required minimum distribution age, typically people are going to be tapping their retirement account. When might they not have to? If they're still working. If you're still working, you do not have to take the required minimum distribution from your account unless you are, you know, self-employed, you still have to take it. Or if you're, I think, more than a 5% owner. I'm hoping I'm not mixing that up. So there are certain times where you don't have to take a required minimum distribution if you are still working. Think more like an employee of a corporation or a business, okay? Other than for yourself. You could tap a retirement account if there would be a death. So you may not be full retirement age, normal retirement age, required minimum distribution age. You might inherit something. So there would be a time you would tap a retirement account for that. That would be earlier maybe than normal retirement age. And then you might tap a retirement account for any other slew of reasons. So let's talk about what some of those reasons are, and then we're going to talk about why it's important to know what reasons you might have to tap a retirement account and why it would be important. So some other reasons other than normal retirement or death would be your cash flow. You have, or you're just retired. You've retired. That's normal. You might not have hit any particular, you know, age after 59 and a half. You might be 60, 61, 62. You might not have a required minimum distribution that you have to take. It might just be that you're retired. Okay, so that's normal. Cash flow, if you are just having cash flow problems and you're not at the normal retirement age, and you've saved all your money in your retirement account and you're on hard times and you just need some money. And in your mind, you might think this is a hardship. I have to take it. And gosh, because I'm in such a bad way, the IRS should understand and not charge a penalty. We're going to talk about that because that isn't the case necessarily. So you got to be careful about those just kind of general reasons why you might need to tap your retirement accounts. You might need to tap it for education for yourself, your spouse, your children. You might be buying a new home and you think, well, I heard from my friend, my neighbor, that if I take money out of my retirement account for my new home, that that's an exception to the 10% penalty. We're going to talk about that and see if that's true. And medical expenses, that would seem like a reasonable reason to take money out of a retirement account if that's the only place you have money and you had a big cost and you need it. We're going to talk about what it would take to kind of make that an exception to an early withdrawal penalty. Divorce, you might have a divorce pending divorce or already divorced, and there's reasons why it would be important to know about tapping retirement accounts to, in the marital asset division. So we will talk about, as we go through the show here, the reasons we're tapping, why it's important, and some of the rules around this, so that if you have to tap it, that you understand the rules and how they will apply. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you are more comfortable doing. If it's off air, you just call in and Lori C. will take your question and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. That works fine too. But I do enjoy talking with you as well. So we are talking tonight about accessing retirement accounts, when and how. And I will add that if you find yourself in a position where you think you need to do this, you really should seek out help from your advisors to make sure that you're doing it to the best advantage for you. If you have to, there might be other options available. A real quick story, I had a couple who had already retired and wanted to take money out of their retirement account to do some renovations. This is a story I've told a number of times because I thought it was, quite clever on my part, actually, to talk them through this. Because what happened is they thought they were going to do this big renovation and they were going to withdraw the money from their IRA. They said, we've saved for our retirement. This is, you know, what we've saved. This is what we want to do. And it was a big chunk of money. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head. You know, maybe it was like $12,000, I think. Anyway, what they had wanted to do was take the money out of their IRA, but what they hadn't factored in is that once they were in retirement, they didn't have pensions. They really just had Social Security and some bits of other income. If we were to have taken that money out of the IRA and put it on their tax return, a big chunk of their Social Security was going to be taxable. And it ended up because Social Security gets taxed based on how much other income you have on your tax return. And it was going to include it to the extent where they were going to have like $4,000 of taxes on their tax return. And they didn't want to take out a home equity loan, though they had that available to them at a fairly low rate because they didn't want to pay interest. But I just simply had to demonstrate that the interest on the home equity loan was so much less than what the taxes were going to cost them that if they feathered out the distribution from the IRA over, I think it was 4 years, they actually paid way less in the interest than they would have had in the taxes had they taken the hit all in 1 year. So that's why you want to, you know, make sure that you have the options available to you for your set of circumstances, which can vary. Before I move on to continuing our topic, I have a couple callers who called in. Thank you so much. I have Laura from Allentown. I'll take her question first. It's off air. She has a small Roth IRA. Kids are the beneficiary. She hopes they'll keep it and keep passing it down. Can this be done? Laura, what happened? I love Roth IRAs. Any regular listener knows I love Roth IRAs. You said it's small right now. Hopefully you can continue to contribute to it and build that up. And the growth will, you know, hopefully continue over many number of years to become some substantial asset that you can pass on to your children. Any distributions out of the Roth eventually under a qualified distribution would be income tax free. You have your kids as beneficiaries. You hope they'll keep it. They can take it over as a beneficiary Roth IRA, but you say you hope they keep passing it down. It may deplete before they could pass it down to their children, only because when you inherit a Roth IRA, the beneficiary does have required minimum distributions on it. So, Laura, while you're alive, there will be no required minimum distributions for you under current laws on that Roth IRA. So you are absolutely right. You can let that grow, and pass it on to your kids. But once they inherit and become beneficiaries, they need to make sure they transfer it properly into a beneficiary Roth IRA. They cannot take it out. They cannot put it into their own name to maintain this ongoing status. They would transfer it to a beneficiary Roth IRA, and then they would have required minimum distributions over their life expectancy. If they lived a super long life, I would expect it would deplete. Maybe, you know, if they didn't, then there could be something for them to pass on. But what happens, Laura, then, is when your children pass it on to their children, if there's something left, then they, as beneficiaries of that beneficiary IRA, have to maintain the same required minimum distribution schedule that your child was on. All right? So a beneficiary of a beneficiary IRA continues the same withdrawal schedule as that first beneficiary. But it's still a great tool, great estate planning tool. Love it. So yes, your children can name subsequent beneficiaries, but there will be required minimum distributions going on after that. I had Anne from Bethlehem call in a question. If you don't take out your required minimum distribution at 70 and a half, what happens? Well, first, Anne, if you're still working, you probably don't have a required minimum distribution. If you have missed it, you have till April 1st of the year following the year age 70 and a half. Then you'd have to take two. And if you're still beyond that and didn't take it, there is a big, or could be a big, penalty. If you let the IRS know as soon as you realized it happened, you caught it and you make it up and you take out your distribution, chances are they will abate that penalty and not charge you for it, but it could be up to a 50% penalty on that distribution you didn't take. So you want to make sure you rectify that as soon as possible. John, we have a call on line one. John from Lower Nazareth. Hi, John. It's Lori. How can I help you?
Hi, Lori. This is not technically a retirement, but it's a life insurance.
Okay.
I have a universal life policy that I through my company that they subsidized for years.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year they said, we're not going to subsidize this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a note from the company and they said, you know, either I pay or they're going to take it out of the cash value.
Uh-huh.
So now I haven't really paid that close attention to it, but I'm 62 and I guess the premiums are fairly substantial,
right,
compared to what I was paying before. So I see this value eroding in a relatively short period of time.
Right.
Now, there is a surrender value on this, I guess, that I could get. Now, if I did that, I imagine that would be taxable, wouldn't it?
It may not. And I'm not insurance licensed, but what I will tell you is that if you ask for like an in-force illustration of that policy and ask what happens if you were to surrender it, they should be able to tell you if there would be any tax consequences. Typically, there is not any income tax consequences on taking the cash value out of a policy if you have not recovered the premiums that you've put into it to date. Now, with the employee,
okay,
so if you've put in more in premiums than the cash value would be, then you could probably avoid the income tax. Where I don't know how this lays is with the employer subsidizing it. Typically, if an employer is helping to pay for life insurance, you actually are paying tax on the value over $50,000 on your W-2. It's code C on your W-2. So that may have already been included. What you've then, that's deemed to be then maybe your contribution. So that's why it would be important to get an illustration from the company. Sometimes they may convert that policy into some other type of policy for you, maybe a smaller face or, something a little shorter or whatever that you could afford.
Is there such thing as a paid up life insurance policy?
Yes, that's usually when now you've paid in so much that it's paid up. But sometimes what happens with certain policies is when you start getting older, the premiums go up, and then what you have built up in the policy doesn't always cover the cost, the ongoing cost as you get older and older.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, John, ask for an illustration. Okay.
Is that what it's called?
An in-force illustration. You should be able to contact them and ask them what your options are for this policy.
Okay, an in-force illustration.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
I'll do that. Thank you, John. Have a good evening. Folks, we're at the halfway point. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You have been listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert on WDIY 88.1. It's now 6:30. Your current temperature is 58. Tonight, a chance of showers, patchy fog after 10 p.m. with a low around 51. Thursday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 77. Thursday night, low around 54. Friday, it's going to be showers and cloudy with a high near 69. Friday night, showers and thunderstorms likely, cloudy with a low around 56. And Saturday, high near 72. Saturday night, low around 55. And Sunday, showers, cloudy, and high near 67. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We are talking about accessing retirement accounts, when and how. I just quickly wanted to go back to Ann's call from Bethlehem. She said, if you don't take out your required minimum distribution at 70 and a half, what happens? That is something that has happened or can happen, even for people who have beneficiary IRAs. Sometimes if it switches from one custodian to another custodian, and maybe you had systematic withdrawal set up, and then you switch to a new custodian, and then they don't set it up. It happens, and I think the IRS understands that, and that's why if you correct it when you find it, they're pretty good about abating that penalty, because that penalty is pretty hefty. Penalties are reported for various early withdrawals and things like that on a form 5329 with your tax return. But Anne, if it's something that you kind of just discovered, there could be some flexibility. You still have the income tax regardless. It's just you trying to avoid the 50% penalty. Some accountants I've heard will have the client pay the penalty and ask for abatement. I have had a few circumstances where we filed, we explained it on the tax return, requested the abatement on the tax return, had the client pay the tax, but we did not have assessed the penalty, and the IRS still accepted that. So it kind of depends on your circumstances. Maybe work with your accountant to get this rectified, the sooner the better. Now, again, Anne, if you were working, you may have an exception to that, because if people continue to work and it's a 401k or something like that, then you don't have the required minimum distribution on the 401k. If it's an IRA, you would still have the required minimum distribution, because that's not an exception. If you're working and have a 401k, beyond age 70 and a half. That's one of those exceptions, unless, of course, you're self-employed, because then there's other rules around that. All right, so I hope that helped. Again, phone number 610-758-8810. I think this subject is fascinating. I hope the listeners are getting something out of it. So let me see if I can talk about some of these exceptions to the 10% penalty. So we said there could be a number of reasons you tap money. If it's just cash flow and you have no other reason, you're just not good with spending, then there's probably not going to be an exception to the 10% penalty if you take it out early. Again, if you're taking it out early is what I'm going into this part of the show now. But there may be circumstances that would be an exception to the 10% penalty. Now, on regular IRAs, if you're taking money out of the IRA, you have income tax on those distributions. This is not about getting any kind of exception for the taxes you have to pay on an IRA distribution. I'm talking about exceptions to the early withdrawal penalty of 10%. So, health insurance premiums for certain unemployed individuals. Now, I have not had this case, and I'm not sure what they mean by certain unemployed individuals, but health insurance premiums for certain unemployed individuals, the exception could be the exception to the 10% penalty. So if your health insurance premiums are $10,000 and you have to take $10,000 out of your IRA, and you are one of those certain unemployed individuals, then it would be 10% on that $10,000. That's $1,000 of savings that you wouldn't have the penalty. Now, you're not going to be able to take out $50,000 and say my $10,000 of premiums. No, it's for the health insurance premiums for that amount. Okay. Here's another one. Distributions to the extent of higher education expenses for the year of the taxpayer, spouse, child, or grandchild. So again, this is IRAs, folks, not retirement accounts, not 401ks, not 403bs. This is IRAs. And this is why you have to know what type of account and which exception you're using. Because just so you know, I'm going to jump ahead here. This is not one of the exceptions to the 10% penalty for your 401k. It is just for the IRA. So distributions to the extent of higher education expenses for the year of the taxpayer, spouse, child, or grandchild. Here's the other little caveat or asterisk we need to pay attention to here. It has to be in the same year. You can't say, well, I paid $20,000 of tuition for my child in December, realized, you know, I had put it on a credit card and I want to pay that off in January and take the money out. No, it has to be the same year if you're going to do something like that. Again, I'm not recommending this for anything. It's just if you have to do it, you find yourself up against the wall and you have to do it, know the rules. So distributions to the extent of higher education expenses for the year of the taxpayer, spouse, child, or grandchild, make sure you do it in the same year. First-time home buyer, no home ownership in the prior 2 years, and it's limited to $10,000 for your lifetime. Here is another one that confuses people. So first-time home buyer, this is the IRA. This does not apply to the 401k or the 403b. When I talk about 401k, I'm generally meaning the 403b as well. This is not applicable to that. So you can't take money out of your 401k, $10,000, thinking you're buying a new house and you're going to be exception to the 10% penalty when you're under the age 59 and a half. This is for the IRA, first-time home buyer, no home ownership in the prior 2 years, limited to $10,000 for the lifetime. Again, in the same year, you have the expense. An IRS levy. So if you owe the IRS money and they decide they're going to levy your IRA, that is an exception to the 10% penalty. Now, there was a case, and in fact, I just read an article by an IRA guru, Ed Slott, that just came out April 29th, very timely for me doing the show today, that someone wanted to avoid the levy, so they went and took the money out of the IRA, thinking that they were going to avoid the 10% penalty because they were paying the IRS. No, the court case said, no, no, no. Tax court said you're still subject to the 10% penalty because it wasn't an IRS levy. You voluntarily took the money out of the IRA. Well, that just adds, you know, more burn to that whole situation. So You wait for the IRS to levy your IRA if that's the situation. Now, that is also an exception to the 10% penalty for 401ks and 403bs as well. Reservists on active duty for at least 180 days. So maybe they're out on their active duty, times are tight, not bringing in enough money. That would be an exception to the 10% penalty. But I didn't see a dollar amount. So if you're in that situation and need that exception, make sure you understand what the rules are around that. I already had mentioned that an exception to the 10% penalty was death. Usually you'll see a code 4 on a 1099-R if you inherited something, took a distribution out of an inherited IRA, or just took a distribution in general out of an IRA that you inherited. It's going to have a code 4. That's how the IRS knows that the 10% penalty doesn't apply to you, because it tells us it was because of death. Disability could be an exception to the 10% penalty, but the guidelines, the restrictions for disability are so great that your interpretation of what disability is might be very different than the IRS's rules for disability. So don't rely on that until you have confirmed whether that your disability would be an exception to that 10% penalty. To the extent the taxpayer has unreimbursed medical expenses exceeding the Schedule A limitation threshold, which in 2019 is 10%. So sometimes people will think the exception to the 10% penalty is for all your medical expenses. No, it's to the extent the taxpayer has unreimbursed medical expenses exceeding the threshold. Well, that could be really high, especially when you take out a distribution which is taxable on your tax return, which raises that threshold. It's a circular calculation, could get you into real trouble. But again, those are exceptions to the 10% penalty for IRAs. If someone is really in dire straits, maybe they're not disabled, but they just can't work. They're disabled enough that they don't qualify for disability, but maybe just can't work. There is another exception to the 10% penalty, and it's called a substantially equal periodic distributions, substantially equal periodic payments, perhaps, SEPP we've seen it as. I call it the 72T calculation. 72T is the IRS code that governs this. And basically, that code section provides guidance to us that if someone has to take money out of their retirement account, an exception to the 10% penalty is if you're in such straits that you have to do it, and you have to do it over a period of time, there's going to be an exception to the 10% penalty if you do it over this substantially equal periodic payments. And basically, it's the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. So it's not something you would want to do at age 30 or age 40, probably getting tight around age 50 even, because you would probably deplete that if you had to do it the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. Now, someone might be 52, 53, you know, maybe having a back problem, just can't go to work, but can't get on disability. That could be an opportunity, 5 years or the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. And there's certain calculations you can do. It can be over, there's three different methods you can use to calculate it. There's certain interest rates that would apply, life expectancies that would apply. The IRS provides guidance on all of this. There's calculators out there. What can happen is if someone has like a really big IRA and they don't really need as much money as it would calculate out on the whole IRA, you could actually split the account and have the calculation for the equally periodic payment based on a smaller account number. Now, what really strikes me is interesting is the IRS looks at our IRAs as all as one, except in this calculation, which I don't quite understand. So you can break up the IRA and maybe have this apply on one account. The problem with this is you can't deter from it. You can't change your mind, you know, halfway through and decide you need to take out more or decide you don't want to do it anymore. because once you start it, you have to, you know, stick with that method. There's one little exception to that. For basically, you have to stick with the equally periodic distribution to avoid the 10% penalty. If you change it in any way, stop it, take extra out, then the IRS says you just messed up that calculation, and then they're going to deem all of the distributions you've already taken as subject to that 10% penalty. So you have to be very careful if you're going to do something like that. So for the most part, these are some of the exceptions to the 10% penalty on IRAs. Some of those I mentioned also apply to the 401k, which I'll go over in a minute. But there's some exceptions that apply to the 401k that don't apply to the IRA. So we'll go through that. So IRAs, those are the exceptions, and that applies to Roth IRAs as well. I'll talk a little bit about Roth when I get back and see how much I can get through in the last part of the show. Michael, I'm sorry you called in with a question, and I will answer that when I come back from the break. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails. Discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Michael had called in and he had a question about an umbrella policy. He has a home, $300,000 to $400,000 value, auto coverage, probably for some personal liability, I'm thinking, assets, various assets, let's say they total $500,000. How much should he have in umbrella policy? Well, first, umbrella policy, folks, kind of gives you extra coverage. Think about an umbrella over your personal property, your real property, your home, your assets. Think about an umbrella over all of that. What do you want to protect? There's, you know, accidents that can happen with your auto. There's accidents that can happen with your home. And if someone knows you have assets valued, your home, your IRAs, your bank accounts, they may want to sue you if there is an accident on the property or involved with you in the car, whatever it might be. They may want to sue you. So the umbrella policy provides that additional coverage for what your homeowner's policy may not cover or your auto insurance policy may not cover. So basically what we're typically looking at, Michael, when we're talking about umbrella coverage, is we want to make sure that your assets are protected. So if you have $1 million worth of assets, generally we would probably want $1 million of umbrella coverage. You kind of want to, what will happen typically, I think, is if you have, let's say, personal liability on your auto insurance of, I'm going to make up a number, $100,000, then the umbrella policy, if someone sues you for $1 million, the umbrella would be $900 and the auto would be $100,000. So I think there's some kind of offset there. So work with your agent and ask them, let them know, say, how much umbrella coverage do you recommend? It's not usually very expensive. I usually also suggest that you make sure you have things like sinkhole coverage or flood damage, some of those extra coverages that people would think would be under your homeowners, and they're not always. So make sure you're talking about those extra endorsements that you might need. All right, so I hope that helps. Umbrella policy, it's a good thing in this litigious society that we have. So let's talk about some of the other exceptions to the 10% penalty. What I wanted to mention about the simple IRA, that could be a 10% penalty if you have an early withdrawal, but guess what? It could get worse than that. If you have a simple IRA and you take it out within 2 years of being a participant, so you became a participant, less than 2 years ago and you say, oh, well, I'm going to take it out because Lori said it's a 10% penalty. No, it's a 25% penalty if you take a distribution from your simple IRA within the first 2 years. We have a call on line one. We have Mitchell. Hi, Mitchell.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Good. How can I help you?
My question is about contribution limits.
Uh-huh.
And I know that the contribution limit for 2019 for a Roth IRA was $6,000. And I believe the contribution limit for, if you're under 55, and I believe the contribution limit for a 401k was $18,000.
For 2019, it's $19,000 for
okay.
the 401k. And for the Roth, I believe it is $6,000 if you're under
okay.
age 50. If you're over
okay.
age 50 for the Roth, you get an extra $1,000 to seven and in 2019 and an extra $6,000 on the 401k. I hope I remember my numbers right. So those are
my
the
question is mm-hmm. about Roth. So
uh-huh.
I did max out my Roth on my own, separate
okay.
from my employer,
okay.
my Roth IRA.
Okay.
And then I am participating in a 401k that's sponsored by my employer, and they offer both a
traditional
and a post-tax.
Right. And the post-tax is the Roth 401k?
Yes.
Because sometimes they still offer after-tax contributions, but you actually have a Roth feature on your 401k. Okay. And they're separate. They're different kinds of plans, Mitchell. So if your question is, can you do both? As long as your income is within the range, and don't tell me what it is, but if your income for tax purposes is within the range for Roth IRAs, let me just tell you real quick, for married, filing, joint, at least in 2018, I don't have the 2019 numbers, it was if you're making under $189,000, you can max out the Roth as long as you have earnings. And if you're single, it's $120,000. So that's what I'll call like the regular Roth. That you can absolutely fund on your own. Then the employer plan, if you're using the Roth feature or either feature, you can max that too. Because that plan is a qualified plan under ERISA, which I mentioned at the top of the show. 401k plans fall under a different rules than the IRAs. So they're considered two different plans, and yes, you can max both of them.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
So wonderful. Good job, by the way. That's great.
Thanks.
Okay, have a good night. I love when people are good savers. you will really love it when you're older and can retire sooner than all the other people who have to keep working. Although some people keep working because they love working, and that's okay too. So that was a great question, Mitchell. And that emphasizes why it's very important to know the different types of plans that people have, because the IRA rules, Roth IRA rules, are different than the qualified plan rules, which are the 401k, 403b, Roth 401k. All right. Very good call, Mitchell. Thank you for that. So the exception to the 10% penalty for 401ks, some are the same as the IRA, some are different. And the big, big different one that I like people to know about is if you separate from service in the year you reach age 55. So if you retire, you quit, or you're terminated and you turn 55 by December 31st of that year, and you realize you have to tap your retirement account. Again, you'll have income tax unless it's a Roth one, but you would have income tax, but you could avoid the 10% penalty if you understand that you fall under this exception. That exception does not apply to IRAs, but it's a great exception for retirement accounts, especially in those years when a lot of people were being laid off and terminated at age 55. This was a great thing to have in your back pocket. In fact, I would tell people, don't roll over your 401k if you were 55 in the year of termination, because you may have to tap that money. You can avoid the 10% penalty. If you roll it over to the IRA, that exception no longer applies. That's why it's important to know the type of account you have and these ages. Very, very important. Some of the other exceptions, I wanted to mention something about borrowing real quick. So the IRA, remember I had said you could withdraw $10,000 from an IRA pre age 59 and a half, avoid the 10% penalty if you're a first-time home buyer. I said that was not available in the 401k. The IRAs you can't borrow from, but I did want to mention you can borrow, typically if the plan allows, from your 401k, and you can borrow for a principal residence, for a payment on a principal residence. But that's a loan, and that's borrowing. That has its own implications. There's not an income tax consequence unless they terminate you or you leave, and then you have to pay up on that loan. If you don't have the money, that could be a problem. It's deemed a distribution, and then you would have a 10% penalty. But that is something to understand the difference there. When people say, I use my 401k for my house, it's different than taking the $10,000 out of the IRA with the exception of the 10% penalty, first-time home buyer, very different than borrowing from a 401k. All right, so some of the other exceptions to the 401k, the 72T substantially equal periodic payments I mentioned on the IRA, you might say, can I do that to my 401k? Well, not while you're employed. It might be available to you as an exception to the 10% penalty, but not while you're employed. Typically, that would be after you've separated from service, separated from employment. Sometimes people continue to keep their 401ks with that former employer. Again, total and permanent disability, death. As I mentioned before, for unreimbursed medical, the IRS levy, those are similar to the IRA. Military, as I mentioned. Here's the other one that's available on the 401k, a quadro, a qualified domestic relations order. So if you're going through a divorce, you need to work with your attorney, and they have to write up a special document to have a qualified domestic relations order provided to the trustee of the plan to split the 401k to both spouses involved in the divorce. That's a qualified domestic relations order. Why I want people to know about that is because that's something else you might not want to roll over to an IRA, because guess what? Quadro is an exception to the 10% penalty. If I am that spouse who received half of my divorced husband's 401k, I have an exception to the 10% penalty on any distributions I have to take out of that 401k. That is not afforded to me through the IRA. All right? Really important to know. 403B is very similar. I only have a couple minutes left, so I just wanted to mention a couple other things. Social Security, if you collect early and you have a normal retirement age of 67 and you decide to collect at 62, you're going to take a huge haircut on that Social Security benefit. It's up to 30%. It is 30% if your normal retirement age is 67. Back when the normal retirement age was 66 and you collected early at 62, I think it was like a 25% haircut. Well, it's gotten to be a bigger haircut if you're younger and have a longer, later normal retirement age, full retirement age. So be careful of that. I also want to mention, as I've been mentioning a number of times, for people who are turning age 66 this year, that means you're born in 1953. If you're married, you have a spouse. If you haven't collected Social Security already, there is still available to you and only you the restricted application where you can, one spouse can file for their benefit. And if both are full retirement age, the other one who's full retirement age, maybe they want to delay to age 70, they could file a restricted application for their spouse's benefit. Generally, what we're looking at there is the higher earning spouse. We like them to delay if all the circumstances fall just right to maximize the benefit. But the lower earning spouse is still getting a benefit, and you could file a restricted application for your spousal benefit. So that's something to keep in mind. What else did I want to? Excess contributions. If you put too much into a retirement account, an IRA, and you weren't supposed to, you weren't eligible, or as I mentioned, Mitch and I were just talking about, he put money in his Roth. If all of a sudden he realizes, I was way over those income limits, I wasn't supposed to put that in, then that would be an excess contribution. If you get it out by April 15th of the tax year, so 2018, we would have had to get it out by April 15th of 2019, you should, for the most part, be okay. If you didn't get it out and you're a little late to the game, there could be an penalty of 6% for excess contributions. So you want to rectify that as soon as possible as well. Employers have a 10% penalty on excess contributions. One other quick thing I had wanted to mention was with the qualified business income deduction that is available to people, for those self-employed people, you might want to review whether you want to fully fund your retirement accounts, because that hurts the ability to get that full credit, the qualified business income. That's information for a whole nother show. Folks, I hope it was helpful tonight. If you have questions, you can always send them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Next week, I have Jim Ruggiero, an attorney, coming on to discuss caring for a loved one, Alzheimer's, and planning. So Jim's been a frequent guest and a great estate planning attorney, and we're going to talk about caring for a loved one, Alzheimer's, and planning. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank all of our listeners tonight. I love the questions. Great questions. I really appreciate it. It's what keeps me coming back every week. And again, you can send questions to yourfinancialchoices.com if we didn't get to you tonight. Thank you, Lori, for taking all those calls. Thank you, Shandi, for being here. And folks, have a great week. And remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a good night.
Thank you, Lori. And if you miss any other program tonight, go to www.wdiy.org and click on your financial choices. This is WDIY 88.1. It's 7 o'clock. Your current temperature is 58. Tonight it's going to be low around 51 on your Thursday. It's going to have a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 77. And later that night on Thursday, it's going to be low around 54. And Friday, it's going to be showers and thunderstorms, high near 69. Keep it here for lots more music and NPR news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Attorney General William Barr testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Capitol Hill today. NPR's Windsor